an idea that I actually thought of when I was learning with my son this year, this week. We were learning Gemara Shabbat, and so this is not related to the Parsha, but it's a very interesting idea that I was thinking about. The Gemara says the following. The Gemara notes, it's a very intricate, complicated Gemara, so I'm not going to really go into it. But let's say, for example, you're standing, the Gemara says, let's say, for example, you're standing inside, okay, and you take your hand, and inside, in your hand, you take it, you stick it out the window into a Rishut HaRabim. Mm-hmm. Okay, so according to the halacha, you haven't really done anything yet, because you're not violating the Itzura of Hotza'ah until you have what's called an Akira, lifting it up, and a Hanacha, you place it down. So the prohibition of Hotza'ah is only when you pick something up in one Rishut, in one domain, and put it down in another domain. So now let's say I take my hand and stick it out the window. So the Gemara says, well, am I allowed now to bring my hand back in? Because on the one hand, it's outside, but on the other hand, it's not. So maybe the Rabbanan made a knas. Maybe the Rabbanan made a prohibition punishing us. You know, you weren't supposed to do it, so you put your hand out. So therefore, maybe they punished you and said, oh, yeah, now your hand's out, you have to wait. You can't bring it back in because it's ringing from the outside to the inside.
For the rest of Shabbos.
It's for the rest of Shabbos. Exactly. That's exactly the question. So the Gemara says, the Gemara wonders, says, well, what's the point of the knas? If the point of the knas is to punish you, fine, then you did something you weren't supposed to do. So maybe you're not going to do it again if you have to stand there for the rest of Shabbos. He says, what's going to happen? If you're not allowed to bring your hand back in because the Rabbanan say you're not allowed to because they're punishing you, so what are you going to do?
You're going to go out.
What?
You
can't go out because then you're going to let go.
If you drop the thing, then
if you drop the thing, then you violated the oraita. So the Gemara says, well, isn't that the opposite of what you're trying to do? The whole point of the knas is to prevent somebody from violating a deoraita. So why would the Rabbanan give a knas that's then going to ensure that the person will violate a deoraita? And so I was thinking about that in the terms of the way we deal with our children. And ideally, sometimes a parent has to punish his child. So ideally, what's the point of punishment? It's not retribution. The point of punishment is some kind of
correction,
right? So you don't do it again. But there are times when the punishment is such that it will only make the situation worse. You know, the example I gave to my son was, if a child is a good child, is relatively good, so then the punishment will bring him back. Let's say the child really feels like my parents hate me, and then he misbehaves. So the parents punish him. So what's he going to think?
They really hate me.
Right. Exactly. So it just raises a very interesting question about child rearing and punishment, and that it's not obvious. What?
This has been a big thing.
It's not obvious that punishment is always the right answer. It's not obvious, and you have to really take into measured account, is this punishment going to correct the problem, or will it make it worse? Yeah. And if it's going to make it worse, what is the corrective action that will...
So is it correct to say, I really want to punish you, but I feel like it's...
Maybe, sometimes. Sometimes. I'm not giving answers. This is an interesting Gemara that I hit yesterday, last night, and not relevant to the Parsha.
Even if it's a logical question.
Shabbat, duh. Gimel on the bed, I think. Shabbat the Gimel on the bed. But, you know. It's not the topic. The punishment is not the topic of the Gemara. But it's a message that emanates from it. Okay. So today, we're going to do Parshat. We're in the middle of Parshat Vayishlach. And I want to start from Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yudchet, the end of Perek Lamed Gimel. Chapter 33, verse 18. Should be a baby chair there. Darn it. Okay. Okay. Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yud Chet. Okay, we're going to start from after. No, we're going to start from after the Yaakov has encountered Esav. He's encountered Sabrosh Shel Esav. And we're going to study the beginning of the story of Dinah. We're going to study a little bit before the story of Dinah and the beginning of the story. Okay? Lamed Gimel, Yud Chet. Vayavo. Actually, we're going to go to Yud Zayin. Okay, 1 second. Two psukim back. The end of the story. Ted Zayin. 16. Vayashav bayom hahu Esav lidarko se'ira. So Esav went home. Right? And there's a lot of literature about the fact that Yaakov exerts a tremendous amount of energy to separate himself from Esav. Esav's like, hey, brother, we should stay together. And Yaakov spends a lot of energy convincing Esav, you know, my kids are young, and I really don't want anything to do with you. And fine, Esav goes home. V'Yaakov nasa Sukkota, v'yiben lo bayit. Yaakov traveled to this place called Sukkot. Sukkot appears in a number of different contexts. There are a number of Sukkots in the Torah. Right, we have another one in Mitzrayim. The Jewish people travel to Sukkot. The number of Sukkot, so we don't really know where it is. Ulumiknehu asa Sukkot, right? And he made Sukkot booths for his cattle. Akein karashem makom Sukkot. So he went to this place, someplace. The Midrash says, Rashi says, he spent 18 months there. Okay, he spent 18 months in Sukkot. Remember, he's on his way home. Vayavo Yaakov shalem ir Shechem, asher be'eretz Kinan. Bevo'o mipadan aram, vayichan et p'nei ha'ir. Yaakov came shalem. What's shalem? Whole, complete, to the city of Shechem, asher eretz Kanaan. Bevo'o mipadan aram, his way to padan aram. Vayichan et p'nei ha'ir. What is vayichan? Vayichan, from the word?
Machane.
From the word machane. Machanot, and he encamped et p'nei ha'ir.
Face of the city?
Looking, is that what they say?
No.
Et p'nei, very good. Et p'nei ha'ir. Et p'nei?
Before the city.
Of the face of the city. So it seems like he encamped. Where did Yaakov... What?
The entrance.
At the entrance of the city. This is very interesting. That something. What else is unusual about the Pasuk? What else? No, well, that's obvious. That's et p'nei ha'ir. What else is unusual about the Pasuk?
Shalem.
Shalem. Well, what does that mean? What does that mean? All right, would you mind closing the door? It's a little chilly. Okay? What does it mean by Yavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem?
He didn't have any leftover junk in
his heart.
Yeah.
From?
Esau.
Okay. Well, junk in the heart wouldn't be coming from Esau.
Yeah. Yeah, but he also was very concerned about meeting Esau. He fantasized that all this stuff was going to happen.
Yes, he did. So see Rashi. Rashi calls the Midrash Shalem on Yurchet. Rashi says it's three types of Shlemut. Shalem begufo, right? Whole in his body. Why shenit rape mitzal ato? He used to limp. Why did he limp? The angel slammed him on the hip. Okay. Shalem b'mamono, whole in money. Shelo chaser klum mikol oto daron. Remember, he's sending gifts to Esau the whole time. But so for some reason, like, he's still shalem. God made up the money. Shalem b'torato, whole in his Torah. Shalosh akach tamudo bebeit Laban. Right, so he retained. He comes whole. He's complete. Right, he's complete financially, physically, monetarily, spiritually. Okay, very nice. We're going to come back to the word. We will come back, God willing, to the word shalem at another time. Okay. Vayichan et pnei ha'ir. He encamped at the face of the city. What did he not do? It's interesting. What you would expect him to do?
Go in.
Right. Why? There's this city called.
Why shouldn't he go in or why shouldn't he go in?
Why should he go? Why didn't he go in?
Well, what was there for him?
What's that?
What was there for him in
Shechem? Well, what did he want? Let's see what he does. Yotet. Vayiken et chelkat asadeh asher natasham alo miyad v'nei chamor v'ishchem. So he bought the sadeh, the field, the portion of the field, where he pitched his tent from the people, from the city. B'me'ah kesita, for 100. Bucks, I don't know, whatever, kesita, 100 whatevers. Okay? Mm-hmm. So he bought the field. So why did he encamp at the face of the city?
Because he needed it for his animals.
No. Why did he encamp? Because he wanted to live there.
Okay.
Okay? Well, where didn't he live?
Inside the city.
In the city. He specifically encamps at the face of the city. He doesn't camp in the city. And then what does he do? Vayatsev sham mispeach. Well, why didn't he live in the city?
Didn't want to get involved with people.
What?
Didn't want to get involved with the people.
Why not?
Didn't want to be influenced.
Right, the people of Canaan, obviously. We don't want to live with the people of Canaan. We want to live outside the people of Canaan. And yet, this is the conundrum. Right?
He wanted to be connected with them somehow.
Oh. For which? Like, I mean, why did he want to be connected with them?
Oh, well,
maybe he wants to be influenced them.
There's trade, there's business, that's probably the primary thing.
Or Kirov. Vayasev, next pasuk. Vayasev sham mizbeach. Vayikra lo el Elohei Yisrael. And he built an altar there. So he bought, like, you know.
This is Beit El.
No, it is not. We'll get to that in a minute. We'll get to that not in a minute. We'll get to that in a while. Okay? He bought the parcel of land right outside the city limits. And what did he build there?
Mizbeach.
Mizbeach. Like who? Lechabad. That's exactly right. Like who? Who used to do that?
Abraham,
like his grandfather, who was also Chabad. 100%. Okay? There's a problem with the pasuk. Okay? Vayatzev sham mizbeach. We're going to spend a few minutes on this. And he placed there mizbeach. Vayikra lo el Elohei Yisrael. And he called
the mizbeach
lo it God, the God of Israel.
What's the it?
Well, what do you cry? What's it? Well, give me some options.
The mizbeach.
He called the mizbeach.
The place.
Hashem. He called God. What?
Himself.
Why are you frowning?
I don't know.
Well, which one of those do you like and which one of those don't you like?
Well, he becomes Israel, right?
Well, he is Israel. Well, that's also another issue. Remember, the angel called him Israel, but... before, but God gives him the name officially later.
Right.
So this actually is very interesting. This story comes between the struggle with the angel and his name, and God giving him name. Just to point out. Okay? So what did he call the Elohei Yisrael? What does it seem like? First, before we look at Rashi and on the Mefarshim, we have to see what the Pasukim said. What does it sound like from the Pasuk?
It sounds like he called Mizbeach.
Good. He called him Mizbeach El Elohei Yisrael.
He can't call himself El.
He can't call himself El. Okay? What's the problem?
Mizbeach isn't a god either.
Ah, right. Vayikra El Elohei Yisrael.
How can you call
what?
Avodah Zarah.
Yeah. Right. It's unusual to call the idol El Elohei Yisrael. The altar. Vayikra lo, and he called
to Hashem,
to God, lo. So right. What did you just say? What's your problem?
It's not the right.
What should it say? Right. Vayikra Hashem Elohei Yisrael. Vayikra lo. Okay. So you understand. We have to understand that this pasuk.
And
pasuk,
that L is not
L. No, and L. L. Okay. So you have to say this pasuk is fraught with difficulty about which all of the Mefarshim are going to stop. Let's look at Rashi first. Please. Okay. Rashi says. Here we go. Says Rashi, El Elohei Yisrael. There's two Rashis. This is actually quite important Rashi, just to understand Rashi in general. You know, just to understand Rashi, it's too useful Rashi on Chav. Rashi says, Lo Shaham Mizbeach Karui Elohei Yisrael. Remember you said, oh, is he probably called the Mizbeach Elohei Yisrael? Wrong. Right? Ela Al Shem Shahaya HaKadosh Baruch Hu Imo Behitzilo. Okay? But because God was with him, and God saved him, Karash Shem HaMizbeach Al Shem Hanes. He called the Mizbeach, the altar, the name of the miracle, the Yod Shvacho Shel Makom B'Kriyat Hashem. So the altar is a praise to God.
Nizkar.
Mi Hu Kolomar, as if to say, Mi Shehu El, Hu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hu Le'Elohim Li, Sheshmi Yisrael. What?
That's very difficult.
Is that difficult how?
Linguistically.
So let's read the pasuk. How is reading the pasuk? Rashi says, Vayikra lo, and he called it the Mizbeach. Parentheses. This is the Mizbeach where I will now devote myself to, close parentheses, El, God, who is the God of
Israel,
who is
me,
and therefore I thank God for that. you know what I'm saying?
It's a bit far-fetched.
No, it's not. I mean, what's Rashi? The fact that Rashi goes to such great lengths, what does that show you? It shows you just how difficult the reading is. It's a very difficult reading. Yeah, but that's what Rashi says. It's very interesting, okay? Mechein matzinu b'Moshe. We find Moshe doing the same thing. Shekara shemo Hashem Nisi. He calls an altar Hashem Nisi. God tested me. By the way, would you say that's the same as what Rashi is saying Yaakov's doing?
No.
Right. Why? How's that different?
One's testing and one's thanking.
Right. This is the God, this is the altar where God tested me. That's not a problem. As opposed to saying, this is El Elohei Yisrael. You know what I'm saying? So you have to read in a lot of words. Okay. The point is actually very interesting. In a study of Rashi, to what lengths that Rashi has to go to reread the text of the Psukim in order to fit in and try to come to a meaning. Okay? Lo shem Mizbeach Karoi Hashem. No, I didn't call the altar Hashem. Why? Because if you call the Mizbeach Hashem, what would we call that? Avodah Zarah. Ella al shem Hanes Karashem HaMizbeach. He says the same thing twice. Hizkir Shvacho Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's to pray, to remember the praise of God. Hashem Hu Nisi. V'raboteinu Darshu. So, by the way, whenever Rashi gives you two answers, what do you know? He didn't like the first one so much. He didn't like it so much. Okay? He says, I'll tell you what Chazal said. Shakadosh Baruch Hu kara li Yaakov El. He says, Vayikra lo El. So I'm going to read you the Rashi itself, and then, okay, before we get to the rest of the Rashi. Says, Vayikra lo, this is from the Gemara in Megillah. Okay, I'm reading for you the Gemara. I have the, you didn't bring this one.
No.
Amar Rabbi Acha, Amar Rabbi Eliezer. Says Rabbi Acha, the name Rabbi Eliezer. Minayin shekra'o hakadosh baruch hu liyaakov el. How do we know that God called Yaakov el? Shene'emar. Vayikra lo el Elohei Yisrael. Who called whom what here? According to the Gemara. Vayikra lo, it means, and God called him, called Yaakov, El Elohei Yisrael. He called Yaakov a god. Okay? The Isal Kadayach, Daisal Kadaitach, Lemizbeach Karale Yaakov El. Okay? If you would think, right, that Yaakov is naming the Mizbeach, Vayikra lo Yaakov, it should say, and Yaakov called it El. Ella, Vayikra lo, Le Yaakov. Who's the lo? Yaakov is the object. He's not the subject. Umi kara o'el. Who called him a god? Elohei Yisrael. So let's read it again. Vayasa sham mizbeach. I'm going to read in the words. And Yaakov planted there a mizbeach. Vayikra lo el. And he called him, Yaakov, a god. Who called him Yaakov a god?
Elohei
Yisrael. God called Yaakov a god. Hmm. Which only leads to the next question, which is,
why?
What the heck does that mean? What does it mean that God called Yaakov a god? Okay? Let's see what Rashi has to say about that. That's what Chazal said. So in my thing, right, the Gemara, he quotes another Midrash. And he says, Amar Reish Lakish. Tell me how this sounds to you, this Midrash. Amar Yaakov, said Yaakov, Ata Eloha ba'elyonim, va'ani Eloha ba'tachtonim. You'll be the God in the Elyonim, above, and I'll be the God, ba'tachtonim, down below in this world.
So Yaakov was supposed to be above?
No. He says, Vayikra lo, El Elohei Yisrael. God, Yaakov says to God, you're the God above, and I'm the God below. How does that sound to you?
Who represents him? The
right. What does it mean that God called him?
He looks at like God like an equal.
It's questionable, very questionable. What do we even do with the Midrash that seems to say that, according to the Gemara, that God called Yaakov El? How do we even supposed to understand that? It's very strange. Let's read the rest of Rashi. Okay? Let's look at Rashi. The end of the Rashi. This is a very important Rashi, actually. See where I am, Rabotenu Darshu. You see the Rashi? Those of you have Rabotenu Darshu from the Gemara, Shakadosh Baruch Hu Karal Yaakov El. Rashi says the following. V'divrei Torah kipatish yefutzatz sela. The words of Torah are like a hammer that can smash a stone. Mitchalkim lekama ta'amim. They're divided into many different ta'amim, very different flavors, tastes, understandings. V'ani leishev shepshuto shel mikra bati. He says, all I'm trying to do is understand the simple meaning of the text. This is one of those, like, understanding Rashi. It's very important Rashi. So Rashi says, I don't like the second interpretation. Why?
Because let's, like, Odeh Vadazara use the Torah as proof that there is, like...
I don't think so. I don't think that's what's bothering him here. I mean, Rashi doesn't think that the Gemara is saying that it's a help for Odeh Vadazara. What Rashi's saying is, I have two Midrashim. Remember, Rashi's not quoting himself. He says, I have two Midrashim. I could take the first one that says it's talking about the Mizbeach, or I could take the second one that says God named Yaakov El. Which one is more authentic to the text?
The first one.
Says Rashi, that's why I chose the first one as opposed to the second one. There's a lot of different meanings, a lot of different understandings, but the first one is more authentic to the text. Which one is more theologically acceptable?
The first one.
Right. I don't know. What do you do with the second one? We'll come back to the second one. In my Chumash, where he quotes the Midrash, he quotes Reish Lakish, he adds in parentheses, this is the editor of the Chumash, the Friedmans, I guess, I don't even know who they are, who edited this Chumash, because they almost never do this, and they write the following. What does it mean that God, that Yaakov says, I'll be a God below? V'hakavana bazeh, this means, she'tzadik gozer, v'hakadosh baruch hu mekayeh. That the tzaddik has the right, has the ability to make a decree that God will fulfill in this world. Meaning, he says, don't take this negatively. It only means good. Yaakov only had the best intentions. Okay? Is that your understanding of what Reish Lakish said? That Yaakov said, you be the God above, I'll be the God below? Hard to know. What? No? How did you understand it?
Well, it doesn't seem to me that just saying what seems to be chutzpah is not really chutzpah, because he's too good a guy for us to accuse him of chutzpah. That's what...
It's not a Buddha's Zarah. Like, God forbid that we should think that Yaakov was creating idolatry. So when you say chutzpah, what do you mean? What are you implying then?
Well, chutzpah, if the second one were correct...
Yes.
That would be...
No, if the second one is not chutzpah, that God called him...
I think it's chutzpah.
Ale. Yeah, if God calls me Yugael, you know, more power to you. Right? The problem isn't if God calls you El. The problem is if you call you El. Right? You call yourself a God.
So it's chutzpahdik to think that Yaakov. It would be chutzpahdik of Yaakov.
If Yaakov
calls himself El.
Right. It would be a problem.
Right.
Why would he do that? What would be the implication? What would give Yaakov the impression to call himself El? Very good. Now remember, we're coming off the context of this fight with this celestial being. And the angel gave him a bracha. Sarita im Elokim ve'anashim v'tucha. Right? You came out capable. You struggled with men, you struggled with God, and you're capable. Let's read on.
There's still a big jump.
Yeah.
From that to that. Mm-hmm.
Well, from to say, Amar Yaakov, ata Eloha ve'elyonim ve'ani Eloha v'tachtonim.
Big jump.
Big jump.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Let's read on. Now we're going to read on. In that context, the next psukim raised just tremendously interesting questions, many of which we will go through. I think Dina, yeah.
Could it be relatability? Like he's placed himself outside the city, and it's a Canaan who are not necessarily believers in God, and they've heard about the story of this guy fighting the angel and winning.
Well, why would they hear?
They wouldn't have heard.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
So it's a private, totally private thing. Totally individual. He was on the. I don't even know if his children knew.
Maybe he feels like if they look at him, you know, if he's given the role of almost like a godlike, and he behaves in that way, that he can influence the people, and then they can elevate to.
Could be very nice.
Wow.
Excellent.
Wow.
Meaning he wants to expect of himself, and that way influence them. It seems clear. That's why he built the Mizbeach.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? To bring godliness to these heathen Shemites.
So, but it also implies a behavior, how he has to act and carry himself.
Mm-hmm.
That he's above man.
Ah, okay. But still, the language of... I just want to point out, we had now three different shatim, three interpretations, all based on the Midrash. Okay? Many of the Mefarshim basically take Rashi, and they say that he called the Mizbeach El Elohe Israel as a way of... Why? Because that's the only really interpretation you can come to. But I want to point out that we have three interpretations. How many of them do we really like that say, oh, that's a shot? None of them. Okay, right. So just to understand that. We don't really like any of them.
Just hold on. In his name, Israel. Sar-el. Isn't that?
Sarita in Elohim. He already was referring to himself as...
But in his name, it's got that he is...
Sarita, we say. Israel. That's why he named him that. Sarita, you struggled. You encountered...
Okay, is that the only interpretation?
Of Yisrael?
Not like a Sar, a master, or whatever.
I don't know.
The minister of Hashem. The minister of El.
I don't know. It's a great question. I don't know. Oh. Anybody? Anyone? I don't really know. I want to point out in another midrash just that, just for our own, like for our laughs. This is Vayikan. Yaakov bought Shechem. Are you familiar? This is a very famous midrash. The midrash says this is one of three places she'ein umot ha'ulam yicholim lahonot et Yisrael le'mor gzulim hem biyadchem. There's only three places in the world that the nations of the world, i.e. today the Arabs, can't say you stole it. What are they? Marana Machpela. The second one? Har Habayit, Beit HaMikdash, and Rato Shel Yosef. All three of those are explicitly bought by us. Right, all three. So therefore, no one can say that we stole from them.
And yet we don't have.
Is there not some?
Everybody says we stole.
That's right. Those are like three really, you know, like.
Isn't Har Habayit Hashem says I'm giving to you?
No, David HaMelech purchased it from the Nehem, from the Yebusi. Remember, he got to that field, he saw on that mountain. As one of those are the three places that we explicitly bought for money, these those places. And all that goes to show you is...
Contracts mean
nothing. Yes, right, exactly. Money doesn't mean anything, right? You can, you can read it any way you want. Right, yeah, right. So what does mean something? Achuzah. Well, you could buy it from here until tomorrow. It doesn't matter. It's not really relevant. Next prayer. Okay, so in this context of this Mizbeah, yeah, I'm going to suggest again, like last week, something. You can take it or leave it. Controversial, maybe. I don't think so. I think Rabbeinu Bechaya says. I'm just repeating what he said. But they say, Dinam bat Lea, Asher Yalda Liyakov, Lirot Bibnot Haaretz. Dina, the daughter of Lea, who was born to Yaakov, went out to see the daughters of the land. Vayar Ota Shechem ben Chamor Hachivi Nesi Haaretz. Shechem, the son of Chamor, the Chivite, the prince of the land, saw her, vayikach ota, he took her, vayishkav ota, he slept with her, vayye'aneha. Vayye'aneha is difficult to translate. It's unclear what exactly he did to her. How do they translate? They afflicted her.
Humbled her.
Yeah.
Violated her.
He says he violated her, right?
Humbled and violated her.
It runs the gamut, the parshanim run the gamut, anywhere from vulgar sexual violation all the way to the fact that he slept with her now made her unmaritable to other people. Because she was, you know, quote unquote, damaged goods. Okay? The question I want to stick with is, obviously there's a whole separate discussion of the reaction of the brothers. It's an important discussion of itself. I don't want to discuss that question. I'm more interested in a more fundamental question. The daughter of Yaakov Avinu is an extension of Yaakov. Okay, so the violation of the daughter of Yaakov Avinu, the violation of Yaakov. When this happens to Yaakov, right? We can say that on the one hand, there's two planes upon which we should look at this. The first plane is the plane of this world, which is what happened, how did it happen, and you know who did something wrong and how could it have been prevented. We'll call it the, you know, Ma'arechet HaBitachon. You know what I'm saying? Like anytime something happens, so you ask yourself, you know, what mistakes were made? Like Gilad Shalit was captured. So the army has to figure out, what did we do wrong? So Dina was captured. So you have to figure out, what did we do wrong? The second question we have to ask is a more metaphysical question. Why? Why was Yaakov punished in such a brutal and vulgar way? Right? It's almost as if, right, when you look at it, like the Netziv says a number of times, he says, if Yaakov could have prevented it, he would have risked his life to prevent it. And rightfully so. That people would, always historically did, risk their lives and would be willing to kill to protect the virtue of their wives and their women. And that's the way history was always that way. Right? To protect the virtue of the purity of the women of your community, you would kill for it and you would risk your life to do it. So the fact that Dina was violated in such a way. You know what I'm saying? It's not like he even loved her and wanted to marry her. He violated her. Vayyaneha. Vayikachota, vayishkavea, vayyaneha. It's almost as if it's a brutal and terrible embarrassment to Yaakov and a terrible spiritual punishment as well. That's something we have to ask ourselves. Why? And it's not just us, we who are asking ourselves this question. Obviously, Rashi asks this question. The Midrash asks this question. And the Midrash comes up with a number of different interesting answers. Okay, Arlen, if you do me a favor, behind you there's a brown set. That's Hamik Tavar. Okay? Can I have the Brishi? That's a Nitzit. Okay. I got my own. Oh, you took it? Oh, it's not there. So, when I need it, I'll let you know. Great.
Can I just ask something? Yes. Rape or whatever of Dina.
Yeah, rape. Just, clearly rape.
Just a spiritual punishment to Yaakov. It can also be said the punishment, the violation of the person itself.
For Dina.
Meaning you're kind of presenting her as an extension of Yaakov, and what happened to her is a punishment for him.
Mm-hmm.
She's just
she suffered.
She's just the vessel. And anyway, she is totally non-persona in the whole story of the Shvatim.
Right.
And anyway, she's just a girl, you know?
Right.
So let's not do that in Peyrush as well. Like, let's give her the, at least
so you
the suffering.
So you want to blame her for whatever she did wrong?
Absolutely not. I'm just saying, she suffered as well. Mm-hmm. It's not just she's a vehicle for his personal suffering.
Right.
And spiritual suffering. This is a person who was violated and raped.
Says the Netziv, what is Vayyaneha? The Vayyaneha was, she was afflicted by the fact that she knew no one would marry her anymore. So it's that it was the recognition that because of what happened to her. Now, I will tell you, it's not necessarily clear that she was raped. It says Vayishkav Okta. It doesn't say he raped her. Mm-hmm. So he clearly, it seems that he seduced her.
Yeah, other people have also said
that
they're going to jail today, so.
I'm not one.
I mean, whatever. I'm not. Best, you know. Meaning, he thinks no, he's no,
the, excuse me, no, the Torah the tar is an objective. The Torah is his description. Yeah, it's not his description.
Oh, okay, fine.
Okay?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, you could say he, like, in the Torah, by the way, just so you know, that someone who is mefakeh, who seduces a girl without marrying her, He's a sort of criminal also, right? You know what the punishment, I mean, you're going to hate this too, but what's the result? If you seduce an unmarried girl and you sleep with her, you have to marry her. Right.
It's not punishment enough for
her. I hate to break it to you. Why did the Torah do that? To protect her.
Yeah.
Right, who would want to marry her?
For sure.
Correct. So, you know, if you liked her enough, now you're going to have to marry her. And the marriage, by the way, don't think of marriage in today's context. You love her and whatever. The marriage was a financial contract guaranteeing her protection. So the Torah was extremely progressive in that way. That you can't just consider women your playthings and you can do what you want and walk away. No, it doesn't work that way.
So then your property.
Well. Call a spade a spade. People hate when I say this. A friend of mine once wrote, he goes, women love to think like, you know, oh, I won't say it. Okay. Yeah. What?
It's in the Ketubah.
It is in the Ketubah. When is it out? You get married, you give her a ring, it's a beautiful symbol of your love. You could marry her with a French fry also. It doesn't have to be, you know, it has to be a Shavar Pruta, but it doesn't have to be a ring. You know, there's no mitzvah in the possession. No, I shouldn't have said that. Anyway.
I have to ask a question because it's blaring at me.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this whole concept of Yaakov being called a god and all that, and it goes from there straight into Dina's violation.
Mm-hmm.
Is there some kind of connection between those?
Well, of course, I'm leading you there. Okay. Thank you. Right. But let's see the other parshanim as well. Look at Rashi first, of course, because we always look at Rashi. What's unusual about the pasuk? Something extremely unusual about the pasuk.
She's called the daughter of
Leah. Right. When in the world? But they say Dina bat Leah. Okay. Now, by the way, there's a pshat. There's a simple pshat answer for that.
Maybe she was sick.
What? No, Bat Yaakov. Then it says, Asher Yaldal Yaakov, which is also unusual. It should simply say, Vatetei Dina Lirot Bibnot Haaretz. We already know who Dina is. There's no, like, we know who she is because she was born.
It's actually funny because she was Yaldal Le'a and she was Bat Yaakov.
But, right, exactly. It's always interesting. Vatetei Dina Bat Le'a Asher Yaldal Yaakov. The whole thing is unusual and superfluous.
What is recorded earlier with the Shema.
Yes, clearly. Ba'achar Kain, remember, like, Ba'achar Kain Yaldal Bat. Oh, by the way, we had a girl. It only goes to Laura's point. You know what I'm saying? Wait a second. So what's the pshat reason why you have to say Bat Le'ah? No.
But you do.
Yeah, we do that. But what's the reason in this context? There's a simple reason. At the end of the story, who
does she marry?
No. At the end of the story of this of Shechem, the brothers avenge. Who are the brothers? Shimon, Belevi, Achim, Hakezonai, Aseh, Ach Otenu. Everybody else is like, you know, what in Nishka Farah are you going to do? And the Shimon Levi say, no, that's our sister. It's not our half-sister. That's our sister. So there's a very, that's shot in my mind. It's very clear why it says Bat Leah. Asher Yaldal Yaakov simply also. Why Asher Yaldel Yaakov? Sorry, but the reason why, one of the reasons why, interestingly enough, it could be very clear that this guy Shem Ben Chamor went after her. Asher Yaldel Yaakov. Who does he think he is? He's going to pitch his tent outside. Like either I'm going to create this bond on my own, or even more obvious,
make him one of us.
No, I don't think so. If you want to make him one of us, what do? You invite him in, or...
No, but this is bound.
You go to him and say, I want to marry your
daughter. That's right. You want to marry your daughters. What is this?
A force.
It's a deliberate attack. Yeah. Right? It's a humiliation. It's clear. It's clear. He and then the funny thing happens, like after he does this, what happens? He likes her. Then he wants to marry her. Right? It's deliberately, you know what I'm saying? You set your tent outside. You're going to establish yourself outside of us. I'm going to drive you away. It's an attack. It really is an attack.
Yeah.
You know, and the most vulgar form of effrontery. It'd be better if he had attacked him. Then we could fight fair. But this is worse. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So what does Rashi say? So I just want to point out there is a pshat. Why bat le'ah? There is a pshat. Why Asher Yaldel Yaakov? Rashi. Asher bat le'ah v'lo bat Yaakov. Why ela al shem yitziata nikat bat le'ah? You wanted Dina to take responsibility, right? Why is she called Bat Le'ah? Because she went out. She'av hi yatzanit haita. Leah was also yatzanit. What's a yatzanit? Yatzanit. Does that sound complimentary? Yatzanit?
No.
No, you never saw this Rashi? Famous Rashi.
But it is.
What's a yatzanit? Oh, first translate. So y'all get it. What's a yatzanit? No.
A rondlöfer.
What? What's the word?
A rondlöfer. Yes,
that's the word. It sounds right the way she's saying it. Which is Afrikaans for what? See, us Americans feel like
chola. A chola.
It's a yatzanit. It's a Jewish word, a yatzanit. It means she was a hussy.
Okay. A rondlöfer.
She wanted to go out and hang out with her, you know what I'm saying? That Leah was. What's that? Mr. Rashi. Why? Shnemar batetze Leah likrato. Remember when Leah sold the Dudaim to Rachel for her night, right? So that she would have Yaakov. She went out to Yaakov to head him off the pass and say, Yaakov, you're with me tonight. So she's a yatzanit. And so Dina, her daughter, picked up that negative trait of roitloiping, or whatever that word is.
Roitloiping.
That's not the word. I don't know what the word is. Okay? So you want to say you wanted Dina to have her own personality? You got what you asked for.
No,
that's not what you wanted. Okay, right, but it is curious. The oath bibinot kanan.
Yeah, she's
putting herself in sakana.
What?
She was putting herself in danger.
Right. Okay. And so she went out to see the girls. She went out to hang out with the other girls. Obviously, you can imagine
she
now. I need to make the work for a
she
minute.
She was lonely.
What do rabbis think of girls who go out to hang out with goyish women because she wants to have friends?
Uh-oh.
Right, not good. Not good. Not good at all. It says in the tzeev, and
you
can find it.
You know, with the connection with Rifuah Shlema, couldn't it be a foreshadowing that she's going to be injured?
Who, her? Dina?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
By saying that she's the daughter of Leah, couldn't that be a foreshadowing? Of the fact that by the end of this story...
You don't need to wait so long. It's one pasuk
more.
So the Chazal say that, and they blame her. Okay, 1 second.
Breathe. I'm good.
1 second. Let me see if I can find it. Should I not find it because he'll be mad at me? 1 second.
No, you should find it.
I can't find it right now. I didn't underline
it. We're just giving Dvorah's baby a bit of Afrikaans heritage.
Okay.
Otherwise she won't hear these words. Has she had biltong? She's heard biltong. She hasn't eaten it.
Alright, I can't find it right now. But obviously, it's not hard. If you look, not so difficult to find a rabbanim who are in Mafaresh. And this is obviously okay? And some say that what did she go out to see? They wanted to see the culture. She wanted to go see the dance. The nightlife, as it were. Okay? So that's what the Midrash says. 1 second, 1 second, 1 second. What? That's one interpretation. There's another very famous interpretation based on Rashi. Rashi says, Me'eza chet ba aleha ariel. Me'eza tam, says the Midrash. Where does this come from? B'sha'ah, it's a very famous Midrash. I don't think we alluded to it last week. B'sha'ah shahaya Yaakov avinu ba v'shvatim imo. Yaakov is coming with the shvatim. Kevan shiba'u malachim v'amru. And the malachim said, Banu el achicha el Esav v'gam alecha likratcha. Esav is coming and he's coming to meet you. So in order to complete this Midrash, we have to look back a little earlier in the Parsha. Okay? So let's look back earlier in the Parsha. Look at the beginning of... One second. Perek. Lamed Bet. Here we are. Chaf Gimel. Perek Lamed Bet Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Chapter 32. On the back? Yeah, 1 second. Sorry. Here you go. Perek Lamed Bet Pasuk Chaf Gimel. You have it? Chapter 32, verse 23. Vayakam ba'layla hu. And he came at that time. Vayikach et shtei nashav. He took his two women. Vayet shtei shifrotav. And his two maids. Vayet acharas ha'yiladav. And his 11 children. Vayavor et ma'avar yabok. And he passed them over the ma'avar yabok. There's only one big problem with that pasuk. What's the big problem? He has 12 children. Who's the 12th? Remember, Binyamin is not born yet. Dina, where is 11 children? Says the Midrash. Hold your place here for a second. Says the Midrash. Right? What?
She was wrong.
No, she was not. Natal Yaakov et Dina unetana beteva. He took Dina and he put her in a
box.
Shelo yireh ota Esav.
That's right.
He didn't want Esav to see him. V'yitol ota li'isha. Esav would say, nice little maidel. Okay? Amar lo hakadosh baruch hu. Says to him, God, Chasachta ota mimenu, you try to hold your daughter back from him. Chayecha, I swear, la adam arel hi mitukenet. Esav is circumcised at least. He grew up in Yitzchak's house. Right? You hold her back from Esav, so she'll go to an adam arel, to an uncircumcised man. Ilu haita, this midrash I always have trouble with. Ilu haita, he said le Esav, had she married Esav, shema haita megayeret ota. Maybe she should have saved him. Okay? Kishanat la Eov. The Midrash said later on, she married Eov. Logi Rauto. Didn't she save Eov? Look at Rashi on where we were. Chaf Gimel. Ve'et achad asar yeladav. Back where we were. V'dina hechan haita. Where was Dina? Nadna b'teva v'nal b'faneha. That's the Rashi, right? Based on the Midrash. She put her in the ark, put her in the box. Ulekach ne'enash Yaakov. And that's why he was punished, because maybe she could have saved him.
And Leah, her mother, prayed the whole time she shouldn't have to marry
Esau. Right, right, right. I have no, that Midrash always troubles me. Let me get this straight. So now let's say your daughter came home with, Baruch Hashem, some non-religious guy who's the worst of the worst. He's got tattoos up from here to tomorrow. They came on his motorcycle. He's into all these crazy things. And what are you supposed to say? Sweetie, wonderful. Maybe you'll be Makariv him. Really?
But if you look at it the other perspective, when you look at a couple, if a woman wants to become more observant, the man becomes more observant.
Oh, yeah, it's always true. 100%. Yeah. Although, and the other way around is much more difficult.
The other way doesn't work so much.
But, and for that reason, Yaakov is supposed to say, sure, Dina, go hang out with Esau.
Yes. Yes, because Dina is not a person. Dina is either a body to be raped.
She's a shekel.
Stop. Okay.
No, this is the thing. No.
One second. First of all, let's be honest and understand that this is the reality of the time.
Exactly.
That the daughter is
considered. Reading that's.
So the daughter is considered the extension of the father.
Exactly.
And he did not want, but the whole point was, as I started, he did not want to have an ongoing continued connection to Esav. He wanted to separate from Esav, and rightfully so. And the Midrashim all go crazy about how important it is that we have nothing to do with Esav. So what's the worst thing you could possibly do? Share a family connection, marry in. Because then you share grandchildren,
right.
And then you're all stuck together.
Right.
So now the Midrash is castigating. It's a strange, I always struggle with this, Rashi. You're gonna hold him at fault and say that his daughter... he's punished for his daughter because he helped her back from somebody even somebody that he didn't want her to marry? Really?
From her uncle.
Now, I think it's a very interesting question. Like nowadays, we take the opposite lesson. We think about this, the idea of hiding people in a box.
I said it was Sarah.
Yeah.
And that also didn't go
correct.
Well.
Correct. Absolutely correct. Correct. This idea of, meaning, what's the result of, I look at it, you can look at it absolutely the other way. What's the result of shutting your children in a box? What's the result that he hit her in a box?
Oh, they
want
to run away. They
want to
break out.
She wants to see. Rebel. But they say, Tina, but she wants to see. She wants to see out there. No, 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 you stay home. You can't see them.
Yeah, but break out.
As opposed to, there has to be some middle ground where you're allowing them some kind of freedom with the guidance, tempered with guidance to allow them, you know what I'm saying? Like I always, so the obvious struggle that we struggle with, is we all struggle with this. To what degree, we live in this very sheltered universe, we do, you know, it's not B'nai Brak, but very well it could be. It's just, you know, Tatitzioni B'nai Brak for all it's worth, right, to some degree. And we do shelter our children. I mean, I hope you do. I hope you have filtered internet, because otherwise your teenage children are all over the place. I really do. But on the other hand, like, it's so interesting. I you know, and there's always going to be sites that they find. There's always going to be things that they see.
Yeah.
You know, but you know at some point, it's impossible that they're not going to have a friend who has an iPhone with unlimited access. They're not going to get it somebody else's house. You're never going to be able to, I'm telling you, you're never going to be able to enclose them completely. It's just not possible. And people who think that they are able to, they're just fooling themselves. They're putting them in a box. And there's a result of that. There's a punishment for that. There's a price to be paid. Unless you're able to hermetically seal yourself. And so if Yaakov really wanted to keep her in a box, then what should he not have done?
Locked it.
No, he could lock the box, maybe. What he should not have done is camped outside. You can't live in the world, you know, so some people say, okay, I want to live in the neighborhood.
That's what we do.
What?
That's what we do.
Yeah, you know, you can't live in the world and then also say, I want to hide myself from the world. You have to choose if you want to hide yourself in the box. Yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So there's a result of that. So the Rashi in and of itself I struggle with. But the deeper message of the hiding in the box and the result of that box, it's a powerful thing. I'll read you a couple other midrashim, okay? Rabbi Yehuda Bar Simon Patach. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Simon says, "Al titalel biyom machar, ki lo tedam ayedleilo." Don't praise yourself for tomorrow, because you never know what tomorrow will bring. The Yaakov Amar. Sometimes Yaakov before had said the following. I can rely on my righteousness for tomorrow. Hare, behold, hitpa'er bedavar hamutal besafek. Yaakov praised himself for something, for his own righteousness, which is not definite.
Is that going back to what he said about calling himself?
Ulakach, yeah. Ulakach ne'enash machar. He was therefore punished tomorrow. Bitcha yotzeit umit aneh. Your daughter goes out, and therefore she is punished. So one gets a sense, I personally get a sense, I'm throwing this out from the Midrash, I get a sense that Yaakov came, well, hold on one second, yeah, I'm going to read you the Rabbein B'chayai. Okay. He quotes the following, Rabbein B'chayai actually says this explicitly. Amar le, Yaakov said to God, Ata Eloha b'ri'el yonim, Va'ani Eloha betachtoni. Remember that midrash we said, you'll be the God above, I'll be the God below. Amar le hakadosh baruch hu. God said to him, Afilu chazan beit hakneset eina notel sarara la'atzmo. The chazan in shul doesn't take the rule control for himself. Va'ata natalta sarara be'atzmecha. You take that control, that power for yourself. Machar bitcha yotzei umit aneh. So tomorrow, your daughter will go out, and she will be afflicted. It was a punishment for him. You think, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Yishchem, and I'm complete, and I'm whole, and now I'm going to be able to dominate, to rule over. No, Yaakov, you don't have the ability to do that. And this whole Ma'aseh Dinah came as a result of that. It's a very, very sharp, kind of stinging rebuke. Now Yaakov took too much for himself. But the angel called him Yisrael. So Yaakov says, Yisrael, I can handle it all. And God comes to him and says, you really think so? I'm not entirely sure. That's one interpretation. And it's a little bit hard. It's a little bit difficult. I saw that Rabbi Chaya. I was actually happy I saw that because I think that there is some juxtaposition. One other interpretation I'll offer you, and he'll tell me either you like it or you don't. Okay, when Yaakov Avinu left, where did he leave from? What? No. Where did he leave from? What was his point of demarcation? When he left to go to Eretz, to Haran. What was the last place, the recorded place, that he left from? And then? Yeah. Before. Before he got there. He stopped one place. He stopped a very important place. Beit El. Which we say is not really Beit El, but really where? Where did he stop? Come on. Bamakom. He stopped and he saw the dream. Where was that dream? Harabai. What did he say when he left? What did he say? He said before he left. At the end of Vayishlach, Vayidar Yaakov neder leimor. He'll come back and do what? V'ha'evin hazot asher samti matzeva ye beit Elohim. V'chol asher titen li asera asvenu lach. So he's on his way back. He dealt with Lavan. He dealt with Esav. He went to Sukkot and stopped. And now what does he do? Not hangs out. He didn't hang out. He camped and bought a place and built a mizbeach. Okay? Vayiken, he built. When you buy, what does that mean? You're sticking around. Okay? I'm just going to stop. At the end of the story, look at the very beginning of Pasuk Perek Lamed Hey, chapter 35, 1 second, and we're stopping in a minute. Mayomer Elohim Ya'al Yaakov, Kum Ale Beit El, V'shev Sham. Go back to Beit El, Va'aseh Sham Mizbeach Le'el Hanir'e Eilecha. And make a Mizbeach to the God that came back to you, Be'barcho Mibnei Esav Achicha. Meaning what? Go, you made a promise. What did Yaakov call the Mizbeach that he built in Shechem? What did he call it? Vayikra lo? El Elohe Yisrael. Right, where does the term El appear before? Beit El. I get the sense that Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying to Yaakov, That's right. Well, I don't know, it's Hebron. It's Shechem, I'm sorry. That's not Beit El. You promised to come back. You promised to come back. And what did you do instead? You thought that I'm back. I'm here in Shechem. I camped, I bought. That's my Beit El. No, that's not your Beit El. And what word, to me, I'm totally making this up, and I at least said so. What word seems out of place in that pasuk? Vayakov, Vayavo Yaakov, Shalem. There's only one place that's Yerush called Shalem. That's right. Only one place that's called Shalem. Right? That's not Shalem. You want to go to Shalem? You want to be Shalem? You want to be Yisrael? You have to go back to Beit El. You have to fulfill your promise. And until you fulfill it, what caused Yaakov to move? He was going to settle in Shechem. But he destroyed it. There's nothing to stay here for. No, now you got to go. Take it, leave it. You know what I'm saying? It's a theory. You know, you can.
So it's
a theory.
Referring to
Beit El. Beit El in this context is Yerushalayim, not the Beit El that we know.
Okay.
And in the Mepharshim struggle, what is Beit El? But one gets the sense that the story of Leah is inherently connected to the Mizbeach that he built before. And so we started and we struggled with that pasuk. Vayikra lo El Elohei Yisrael. What did he call El Elohei Yisrael? Was it the Mizbeach? Did God call him? Was it a sense of hubris? How is that connected to the story of Dinah? Why was Yaakov punished? So we saw the story of she's a Yatzanit. We also saw the Midrash that says, hey, you know, Yaakov should have let her marry Esau, which we didn't really understand. We spoke about the idea of protecting ourselves, protecting our family. And then we finally suggested that this idea of Rabbeinu Bechaye, that Yaakov considered himself Shalem. You think you're Shalem? You're not Shalem. You need a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then we even suggested that Yaakov made a mistake. And the mistake was, he called that place Shalem. He considered building his Beit El in Shechem. And Shechem is not the place. Yerushalayim is the place. God decides where Shalem is, and not Yaakov. And that's our responsibility, to remember where Shalem is, not where we think it is.
And that last one undermines completely the whole idea that he's the El Batachtonim or whatever.
Right.
Because, yeah, you're immortal, you make mistakes. This is how hard you are.
That's right. That's right. Have a good week.
Sure.